Welcome to the podcast service of Sydney's FM 103.2, available on the web at fm1032.com.au.
Around Australia, this is Open House. Glad you're with us. And one of the most popular books in recent times is what we're going to be talking about now. It's called The God Delusion. You probably would have seen it on the best-selling lists. Written by Richard Dawkins. I mean, I think it's made the New York Times bestseller lists for 5 months in a row now. I mean, that's huge. It sold something like 60,000 copies here in Australia alone. And if you know it, you'll know it's Richard Dawkins' stinging attack on the existence of God and the role of religion in the world. Many do disagree with the claims in the book, though, and we have actually, need to state right from the beginning, we have tried to have Richard Dawkins on the program. We haven't been successful to date, but look forward to that opportunity sometime in the future. What's very interesting, though, is Professor of Historical Theology at Oxford University, biochemist and author Alistair McGrath has responded by writing another book of his own, called The Dawkins Delusion, and he joins us now. Alistair McGrath, thanks again for your time on Open House. It's very interesting that Richard Dawkins and yourself are actually colleagues for, in many ways, at Oxford University. In fact, you've actually got similar backgrounds, haven't you? How is your background similar to that of Richard Dawkins?
Well, we're similar. I mean, we both love science. We both have strong views on belief in God. I think that might be where the similarity ends, actually. I mean, Dawkins, as far as I can see, began life with a rather mild belief in God, and then sometime around age 18, switched over to atheism. I did it the other way around. And, of course, for both of us, science is very, very important. Whereas Dawkins sees science as really arguing very forcefully against God, I would say that she's arguing quite the opposite direction, giving you a very good basis for defending God's existence. So it just shows how, you know, two intelligent people can take very different perspectives on this whole question.
Which is a whole talk topic in itself. What was the clincher for you, the thing that caused you to convert from atheism to Christianity?
Well, there are a number of things, and it's hard to point to one of them as being the absolute clincher. But here's something that was really important for me. I think realizing that that atheism just didn't have the intellectual credentials I thought it had, and certainly realizing that the evidential base for atheism was weaker than I'd thought, but also beginning to realize that Christianity was intellectually extremely robust and exciting. I mean, that really was a big tipping factor in my own conversion.
Because you found atheism quite exciting, I remember you telling us earlier on last year, didn't you? You found it exciting at the beginning.
Yes, certainly. I mean, when I was young, I saw atheism as being a liberator. You know, if we get rid of God, the world's a better place. And you see that kind of ideology in Dawkins' book, and I have to say it's one of its least satisfactory aspects. It is hopelessly naive about the darker side of atheism. It airbrushes out the inconveniences of history, like, for example, what happened under Lenin and Stalin in the Soviet Union. So it is, if I can put it like this, a very ivory tower view of atheism we see in The God Delusion.
It's been so incredibly popular, though. Like I said, New York Times bestseller for 5 months, not 5 weeks, 5 months, and thousands of copies sold here. I'm sure that the bestseller lists in the UK have got it right up there on their list as well. What do you put the popularity of the book down to?
Well, I've talked to lots of people who've read this book and asked them why they found it so exciting. And actually, it's very interesting. Christians who read this book say, yuck, this is just so awful as a representation of what Christianity is. Those who dislike religion, and there are a lot of those around, find it gives intellectual legitimation to their positions. In other words, they don't believe in God, but they see this book as saying, hey, you're right. This gives you intellectual respectability. And I think that's really the key to this. It's about intellectually empowering people who already have very often gut-level reactions against believing in God. So that seems to me to be a very important part of this whole picture.
Okay, well, let's explore some of the concepts that Dawkins raises in The God Delusion. And also, the lines are open. If you've got a question at home for Alistair, one of the great minds to be able to explore these kinds of things with, give me a call, 1-300-40-2020, and you can ask your question of Alistair McGrath right now. Dawkins says that he would change his mind the moment somebody presented evidence of a God to him. He says he's desperately waiting for that evidence, but that there is no evidence. What is Dawkins' criteria for proving the existence of God? What kind of evidence is he looking for?
That's a very good question. And one of the difficulties I have is that he's asking for evidence that really can't be provided for any belief system, including atheism, nor democracy, nor, in fact, anything that really matters in life. And this is one of the big problems you find in relation to the God delusion. He says, look, you've got to, in effect, be able to show this absolutely 100% it's right, or with a tiny, tiny, tiny margin of error. And, of course, how many things are there in life you can be absolutely sure like that about? And the point I try to make in responding to Dawkins is that, first of all, atheism itself is a belief system. The best position, if you want absolute certainty on this, is agnosticism, saying, look, we can't be absolutely sure, so therefore we just decide not to actually reach a decision at all. But the key thing for me is simply the realization that that for an awful lot of people there is this belief that unless you can scientifically demonstrate something, it can't be believed in. But of course, there's a very big question here about the limits of science. And Dawkins is very, very silent on that. And that seems to me to be a big issue here.
What are the limits of science then, discussion?
It's a very prominent scientist. This takes Sir Peter Medawar, who won the Nobel Laureate for Prize for Medicine back in the 1960s. In his book, The Limits of Science, published 20 years ago, he said, look, when it comes to understanding how nature works, how the material order hangs together, science basically has got no limits at all. But when it comes to questions of meaning or questions of value, it can't answer those questions. And not just it can't, but it cannot. And that's an extremely important point. I think that really is important because Dawkins does seem to have this idea that science in some way is able to answer all the big questions of life. And certainly there are many who would like to believe that, but I simply want to say that is not so.
Okay. What points then can science bolster faith or provide some sort of apologetic or explanation that maybe there could be a creator out there?
Well, there are many things we could say. In fact, I've just come back from a big conference in Ireland where we were talking about this just yesterday. I think there are a number of things. One is the remarkable orderedness of the world. Why is that so? And more than that, why on earth do we as human beings have the capacity to actually make sense of it? And certainly that is really pointing to there being some inbuilt ordering, some inbuilt design into the way the world is, and something very significant, I think, about our capacity to realize that. And of course, if you're a Christian, this gives you there's a very important point you can make here, which is that both the world and we are created by God. There's a resonance between the way the world is and the way in which we think. And that's very important, I think.
We're talking with Alistair McGrath, who's an Oxford professor and is responding to some of the thoughts that Richard Dawkins has put in his book, The God Delusion, with his own book called The Dawkins Delusion. And 1-300-40-2020 is the number if you have a question for Alistair McGrath as well. You've been involved in a debate with Dawkins. Does he actually have a good understanding of the Bible? Because in many ways he seems to be primarily attacking the Christian God, it seems. I know that he's kind of anti any religion, he wants to eradicate all of it. But what was his understanding of the Bible like?
Well, there is a section in the God Delusion which is about the Bible, and I have to say it really is very, very weak. It seems to me to rest upon visiting a couple of atheist websites and singling out quotes which are taken completely out of context and very often not simply understood at all. So I think there is a real issue there. If I give you some very obvious examples. For example, he has this very weak discussion of Jesus, and he argues that Jesus, in effect, just creates this in-group, out-group mentality. You know, it's just about reinforcing traditional Jewish values, which I find astonishing. I mean, for example, even Richard Dawkins, I think, will have heard of the parable of the Good Samaritan, which is very much about breaking down those kind of barriers. There's also a point that we need to make, which is that in dealing with the Old Testament, Dawkins is highly selective about the passages he deals with. And in this book in general, he simply singles out, he cherry-picks bits of the Bible, bits of the Christian tradition that suit his purposes, and completely ignores those which speak otherwise. And, for example, the whole Old Testament prophetic emphasis on the need for social justice, the need for personal integrity, the need for mercy in our dealings with others, those just aren't talked about at all. So I think I would have to say it's a very skewed and biased representation of the Bible there. But more than that, I mean, you know, anyone can take the Bible and read it as they choose. But Dawkins does not really ask, how do Christians actually read the Bible? And certainly he interprets certain passages in ways that I, as a Christian, would find bizarre. For example, he interprets certain Old Testament passages to mean that Christians should, if they are being consistent, execute their children for disobeying them. Now, I mean, you and I both know that no Christian would dream of doing
that. Where did that come from?
But of course, you know, Dawkins presents this as if this is the way things actually are.
Mm. I know that Dawkins has said in the past that the story of Joshua in the Old Testament is, I quote, morally indistinguishable from Hitler's invasion of Poland, Saddam Hussein's massacre of the Kurds, etc. How do you respond to that kind of claim when the, I guess the war scenes of the Old Testament are raised as a sign that this is a very evil God?
Well, certainly that is a very significant issue, and certainly for any Christian, the conquest narratives are really quite difficult to deal with. I think what we have to say is that that may well have been a very distinctive period in Israel's history, which in no way legitimates that being applied to further, to additional episodes in, for example, Christian history, or indeed in our own day and age. I think Dawkins makes a very important point there, that this kind of war, this kind of massacre is outrageous. But, I mean, let us also bear in mind that there are some dreadful things that happened during the Soviet Union, when, for example, this kind of oppression was used against Christians by atheists. And one of the most astonishing things in The God Delusion is Dawkins' assertion that atheists would never dream of using violence against anybody else. Now, I think we need to say there's a bigger problem than either religion or anti-religion here. There is something about human nature which makes it very, very easy for us to lapse into violence.
1-300-40-2020 if you have a question for Alistair. Angela from Melbourne has called in. And Angela, yours is relation to dinosaurs, and I can see that this would connect in with, I guess, some of the science that Richard Dawkins would raise. What's your question for Alistair?
Where does the dinosaur era fit in the biblical context?
Into the whole biblical story. Where does it fit in? Hey, okay, Alistair?
Well, it depends on how you choose to interpret a dinosaur story. Are you placing emphasis on the extinction of the dinosaurs? I mean, is there a particular aspect of this you want to explore in detail?
Not really. It's just that I've been asked that question, and I don't know how to answer it by, a family member. And I just don't know how to answer it.
It's a big question, and I'd really need to find out exactly where you're coming from to be able to give a good answer. But in general terms, one of the things you'd want to say, I think, is that the whole biblical idea of creation can be interpreted in a number of ways. And some would certainly think of creation as being something that happened in the relatively recent past. And therefore, you know, where the dinosaurs come from is very important in that context. I would certainly see this in a much broader time frame. I would want, therefore, to say that the emergence of dinosaurs and their ultimate extinction is actually part of a very long process which God actually brings us into existence as the height of his creation. And so for me, dinosaurs are a very interesting part of the past. But the really significant thing for me is that in some way God is bringing us into existence, and we really are the height of God's creation, and we're brought into existence in order to relate to him. So I think, when you're talking to your family, I mean, dinosaurs are very interesting. What's even more interesting is them and how God relates to them.
Mm. That's obviously would relate to some of the science that Dawkins would raise in The God Delusion. And 1-300-40-2020, if you've got a question for Alistair McGrath on these kinds of issues of belief, atheism, theism. You may not have a particular faith background. In fact, you might be an atheist. If you want to raise some sort of question, the lines are open for you. 1-300-40-2020. One thing that I find interesting, Alistair, is that Dawkins says that belief is an accident of geography. If you're born in the West, you're likely to be a Christian. If you're born in an Islamic country, you'll be a Muslim. Does he have a point in that regard? Is it just simply geography?
Well, he certainly has a point. I mean, there is no doubt that that there's an issue here about the way in which the circumstances of your birth do affect, for example, not simply your nationality, but also the dominant belief system in your area. But I think there are a number of points that we do need to make here, and that is that, first of all, Christianity is a missionary faith. And one of the reasons that it's a missionary faith is because it believes it is applicable to all people. It's not a national religion, like, for example, Hinduism or indeed the classical religion of Greece or Rome. It is very much saying this for all people at all times, and it makes sense everywhere. And that is one of the very important points you need to bear in mind here, that the Christianity sees itself as trying to build on what is there in other cultures, but at the same time bring it to fulfillment, that in Christ we see the partial truth of other faith being brought to its absolute fulfillment. And therefore, what I'd want to say to Dawkins is that, you know, he himself would argue, look, you know, you need to believe in science, and where science isn't somewhere in the world, then you need to bring it there to bring light to people. And in fact, in many ways, Dawkins and I would adopt a very similar approach, just that we differ about what it is we're trying to bring to people.
Mm. Interesting that Dawkins has quite a bit of missionary zeal himself when it comes to this book, a quote that comes out of the book. He says, "If this book works as I intend, religious readers who open it will be atheists when they put it down." That's quite a statement, isn't it?
Well, he's an evangelist, isn't he? I mean, he's very, very clear he wants to convert people. He describes those who believe in God as dyed-in-the-wool faith heads, which doesn't strike me as being a very promising start for a dialogue. And I think that there's a real issue here, that he is angry. One of the questions I ask myself is, why is he so angry? I think the answer is partly this. I mean, on the basis of his analysis, religion ought to have died out ages ago. I mean, none of the arguments he puts forward in this book are actually new. So he's recycling ideas that have been around for a very long time. In fact, I try to date many of the arguments he uses. I think the date 1890 is actually quite a good one to apply to them. I think really what Dawkins is emphasizing in this book is, look, God ought to have been abandoned years ago. It hasn't. Let's give him the final shove. And yet, really, people who read this book, at the end of 400 pages, they feel that actually he has not made his case. Certainly those who are already atheists like what he's saying. Those who are religious believers, those who are, you know, in the middle, actually find it a deeply disturbing book because it is so aggressive and it is so dismissive.
Do you have any idea why Dawkins is so angry? Any idea about anything that's happened in his background or his past or anything like that?
Well, I did ask him this once. I mean, I think, you know, I can understand that Dawkins does not believe in God. There are many people in that position. But most of my atheist friends here in Oxford are, you know, atheists who are very quiet about their position and certainly are extremely respectful of those who take different perspectives. It's the anger and the energy, I think, that need to be explained. I have to say to you that I know of nothing that adequately explains this. It really puzzles me. It's as if religion is like a red rag to a bull here. It seems to be much. It's not a rational thing. It's something deeper than that. It's emotional. But I cannot find anything that adequately explains that.
1-300-40-20-20, if you've got a question on belief, and particularly in relation to The God Delusion, the book by Richard Dawkins, or indeed Alistair's own book, The Dawkins Delusion, if you'd like to throw a question via Alistair, there's a couple coming through now. One of the areas that I really do want to raise with you, Alistair, is the fact that Dawkins says we don't need religion to motivate us to be good. He says morality is a quality that has evolved in us, where we've developed altruistic genes that enable us to have empathy. What would you say to that idea that we don't need religion to motivate us to be good?
Well, I think the longing to be good is actually part of being human. The real issue is, how do we know what is good? And if we long to do what is good, how are we enabled to do this? And certainly the key point for me is this. I mean, Dawkins himself is very, very clear that science cannot tell us what is right and what is wrong. And therefore, the basic, you know, longing to do what is right needs to be informed. What are the standards we're trying to aim for? If you take a writer, for example, like Iris Murdoch, a very well-known atheist writer some years ago here in Britain, I mean, she made the point, look, unless there is some concept of good that is beyond us and above us, which we cannot change, you know, which is there, we have to try and grasp it, then really, we might as well just be doing what each day and age thinks is right. The question of what actually is right seems to rest on there being something beyond us, something transcendent, which we try to imitate, we try to respond to in what we're doing. And certainly I'd agree with Dawkins in that we all want to do what is right. The real issue is, how do we decide what is right? Because certainly Stalin thought he was doing what was right in trying to eliminate religion in the age of, in bringing about his sort of atheist agendas.
Yes, that's very true. Okay, we're going to pause for a break in just a moment, and we'll take some more questions and comments to and from Alistair McGrath, 1-300-40-20-20, if you have a question for Alistair. This is Open House.
Open House with Sharon and Voysey, FM 103.2. This month in Southern Cross newspaper, jailed Arab evangelist set free from prison in Egypt. Meet the new Bishop of Wollongong, Al Stewart, and Easter, it should be offensive.
For your complimentary copy of Southern Cross newspaper, contact your local Anglican church or call Gary on 9265 1508 and quote FM 103.2. Or you can read Southern Cross online at sydneyanglicans.net. Station sponsor Southern Cross newspaper. News that matters.
The new Acteon crossover SUV is here. So now you can get the sleekness of a sports coupe with the practicality of a full five-seater four-wheel drive. Starting from an incredible $29,990 recommended price for the manual 2.3-litre petrol engine. Plus, Acteon lets you choose an economical 2-litre diesel engine. So see your SsangYong dealer today and check out the Acteon, because resistance is futile. Station sponsor SsangYong. Now you're going places. Plus on-road costs, dealer delivery fee and government statutory charges as applicable.
Glenn Williams has your family's best interests at heart. Focus on the family. 7:30 a.m. and p.m. on FM 103.2. Where else would you be on a Sunday night? Around Australia. This is Open House with Sheridan Voisey.
Around Australia, this is Open House, and we're exploring the world of The God Delusion, the very popular book by Richard Dawkins, and a response to that called The Dawkins Delusion, which is written by UK Oxford professor and academic Alistair McGrath, who joins us now. Alistair, one of the things that Dawkins says is that it's almost child abuse to suggest that a child should be raised as a Christian, as a Muslim, or as any kind of faith. How do you respond to that kind of statement?
Well, I can see he's making an important point. He's saying that you cannot ram belief systems down children's throat. They must have some ability to respond to it, evaluate it critically. I think there are two things I'd want to say in response to this. Number one is that I think Dawkins' book, The God Delusion, makes very, very clear the case for the necessity for good religious education. In other words, setting out, for example, what Christianity actually is. And my real concern would be, what would happen if, for example, atheist parents decided to ram the God delusion down their children's throats and said, look, this is what Christianity is like. And I think we need to really challenge that. But more than that, Dawkins seems to be advocating a system of educating children which actually excoriates religion, which actually, you know, involves getting religion out of things altogether. And I think that is simply both unrealistic and simply unjust. There's a real need, which is enshrined in international law, for people to have the right to bring up their children in their own religious tradition, irrespective of what the children may subsequently decide. So I'm very worried this is Big Brother atheism trying to impose its views on family life.
Mm, okay. Peter has called through from French's Forest and has a question on morality. Peter, what's your question for Alistair?
Oh, g'day. I wanted to see where exactly you're coming from with the view of morality. Is that coming from a...
Whoops, okay. Maybe you can give us a call back, Peter. He wanted to know where you're coming from. We got that far. Alistair, I don't know if you can answer that, can you?
I'll wait for you to call back.
I think so.
He's probably wanting to know more about where we get our moral ideas from. And if you'd like to call back, we can explore that.
Okay. Peter, give us a call back. Maybe your mobile phone gave out. 1-300-40-2020. Okay, I do have a call here from Sam in Melbourne. Sam, what's your question for Alistair?
I just wanted to know, with Noah's Ark, if eventually you had two of every animal, wouldn't eventually over time the genes cross and you'd get a genetic mutation in the animals?
Now, how...
Well, Sam, that's a great question, a very speculative question. I really don't know the answer. We need to know a lot about time frames because genetic mutations take place over a very, very long period of time. So I don't really think I can give a very good answer to that intriguing question, I'm afraid. Certainly, the time frame that Genesis sets out for Noah's Ark is really quite brief. And as you probably know, genetic mutations take place over a much more extended time frame. So I can't really be all that much use there.
Okay. Thanks for your call, Sam. Now, I'm also wanting to throw this quote past you as well, Alistair, because this is quite quite a doozy that Dawkins says in his book. He particularly talks about the Old Testament God being, I quote, arguably the most unpleasant character in all fiction, jealous and proud of it, a petty, unjust, unforgiving control freak, a vindictive, bloodthirsty ethnic cleanser, a misogynistic, homophobic, racist, infanticidal, genocidal, filicidal, pestilential, megalomaniacal, sadomasochistic, capriciously malevolent bully. You kind of go, well, tell us what you really think, Richard. Now, again, that's a very angry view of God. Do you think there is one particular thing that I guess, triggers that kind of anger out of him?
I really don't know. I mean, there may be something in his background that explains this, but certainly there have been many out there who would say, oh, well, we don't believe in that kind of God either, and Dawkins gives us a very good reason just to walk away from God and hold our heads up high. I'd want to say this. Dawkins clearly doesn't believe in a God like that, and neither do I. That's an extremely important point to make, and the reason I don't believe in that is because I read the Old Testament through the light of the life, death, resurrection, and teaching of Jesus Christ. And of course, for Christians, Jesus is the lens through which we read the Old Testament. He's the fulfillment of the law and the prophets, and therefore we read them through his example. And that really, when you do that, you see God in a very different way. And actually, what I want to say is that what Dawkins is rejecting is a very patriarchal Jewish idea of God, which the New Testament transforms utterly. And I think that this is why I place so much emphasis on the importance of Jesus Christ, that Dawkins seems to think that Jesus rejects the Old Testament idea of God. He doesn't. He transforms it into what he enables us to see it as it is meant to have been seen. And that seems to me to be an extremely important point to make here.
Mm. Okay, Ken has a call. He's called in from Hazelbrook. Hi, Ken. What's your question for Alistair?
My question is, what does Dawkins propose as an alternative to Christian morals and ethics? What would he replace it with?
Well, thank you, Ken. The answer is, towards the end of the God delusion, he sets out his own, he doesn't actually call them Ten Commandments, but certainly he sets up his own moral codes. For example, you know, you can do what you like, providing you don't hurt people, a whole series of things like that. And certainly his replacement for traditional Christian values has won very, very faint praise from atheists because it's seen as being so anodyne, so unexciting, so unhelpful. It's really a very, very bland restatement, if you like, of what we actually find in most wisdom teachings. So I don't think he really takes us very far. And in fact, I think it's fair to say that for most atheist commentators on this book, Dawkins is more interesting because of the criticisms he brings to bear than the positive proposals he makes in their place.
Mm. I find that very inadequate, because if he's trying to replace Christianity, he needs to have a proper alternative.
Well, I absolutely agree with you. And
so
I think that it may well be that he's just run out of space or something like that. Again, talking to atheist readers of the book, my sense is that they read it primarily to give intellectual legitimation to their rejection of God, rather than because they want to buy into what he's proposing in its place.
Some fascinating things. I think we'll have to leave it there. Alistair, thank you very much for your time tonight. It's been fascinating to explore this with you. I'll throw one more question to you. If you could say one thing to the many people that have read The God Delusion, just one thing, you had the opportunity to speak to all of them in one fell swoop, what would you say to them? What would you encourage them to do as a result of reading The God Delusion?
I would simply say, look, this is a very unfair book. And what they really need to do is ask, why do so many people believe in God if the case is as bad as Richard Dawkins makes out? The answer might just be that the book is thoroughly unfair and misrepresents what God is all about.
Alistair McGrath, thank you very much for your time on Open House tonight.
Pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, that's Alistair McGrath, who is a number of things: Professor of Historical Theology, Senior Research Fellow at Oxford University, and author of The Dawkins Delusion. Actually, Alistair's going to be in Australia later in the year. He'll be in Melbourne on the 27th of September, and October 1 he'll be in Brisbane, and venues are still to be announced, but we'll keep you up to date with that. And we can download the podcast for you during the week as well. By midday tomorrow we'll have that discussion up on the openhouse.net.au, theopenhouse.net.au. Thanks for your calls.
We hope you enjoyed this FM 103.2 podcast.
To listen to more great audio, visit fm1032.com.au.